19. Stopping the World. The next day, as soon as I woke up, I began asking Don Juan questions. He was cutting firewood in the back of his house, but Don Genaro was nowhere in sight. He said that there was nothing to talk about. I pointed out that I had succeeded in remaining aloof and had observed Don Genaro's swimming on the floor without wanting or demanding any explanation whatsoever. But my restraint hadn't helped me to understand what was taking place. Then, after the disappearance of the car, I became automatically locked in seeking a logical explanation, but that didn't help me either. I told Don Juan that my insistence on finding explanations wasn't something that I had arbitrarily devised myself just to be difficult, but was something so deeply ingrained in me that it overruled every other consideration. "It's like a disease," I said.
"There are no diseases," Don Juan replied calmly. "There's only indulging. And you indulge yourself in trying to explain everything. Explanations are no longer necessary in your case."
I insisted that I could function only under conditions of order and understanding. I reminded him that I drastically changed my personality during the time of our association, and that the condition that had made the change possible was that I had been capable of explaining to myself the reasons for that change. Don Juan laughed softly. He didn't speak for a long time.
"You are very clever," he finally said. "You go back to where you've always been. This time, you're finished, though. You have no place to go back to. I won't explain anything to you anymore. Whatever Genaro did to you yesterday, he did it to your body. So let your body decide what's what."
Don Juan's tone was friendly, but unusually detached, and that made me feel an overwhelming loneliness. I expressed my feelings of sadness. He smiled. His fingers gently clasped the top of my hand.
"We both are beings who are going to die," he said softly. "There's no more time for what we used to do. Now, you must employ all the not doing I have taught you, and stop the world."
He clasped my hand again. His touch was firm and friendly. It was like a reassurance that he was concerned and had affection for me, and at the same time it gave me the impression of an unwavering purpose.
"This is my gesture for you," he said, holding the grip he had on my hand for an instant. "Now, you must go by yourself into those friendly mountains."
He pointed with his chin to the distant range of mountains towards the southeast. He said that I had to remain there until my body told me to quit, and then return to his house. He let me know that he didn't want me to say anything or to wait any longer by shoving me gently in the direction of my car. "What am I supposed to do there?" I asked. He didn't answer but looked at me, shaking his head.
"No more of that," he finally said.
Then he pointed his finger to the southeast.
"Go there," he said cuttingly.
I drove south and then east, following the roads I had always taken when driving with Don Juan. I parked my car around the place where the dirt road ended, and then I hiked on a familiar trail until I reached a high plateau. I had no idea what to do there. I began to meander, looking for a resting place. Suddenly, I became aware of a small area to my left. It seemed that the chemical composition of the soil was different on that spot, yet when I focused my eyes on it, there was nothing visible that would account for the difference. I stood a few feet away and tried to feel, as Don Juan had always recommended I should do. I stayed motionless for perhaps an hour. My thoughts began to diminish by degrees until I was no longer talking to myself. I then had a sensation of annoyance.
The feeling seemed to be confined to my stomach and was more acute when I faced the spot in question. I was repulsed by it and felt compelled to move away from it. I began scanning the area with crossed eyes, and after a short walk, I came upon a large, flat rock. I stopped in front of it. There was nothing in particular about the rock that attracted me. I didn't detect any specific color or any shine on it, and yet I liked it. My body felt good. I experienced a sensation of physical comfort and sat down for a while. I meandered in the high plateau and the surrounding mountains all day without knowing what to do or what to expect. I came back to the flat rock at dusk. I knew that if I spent the night there, I would be safe. The next day, I ventured farther east into the high mountains. By late afternoon, I came to another, even higher plateau. I thought I had been there before. I looked around to orient myself, but I couldn't recognize any of the surrounding peaks. After carefully selecting a suitable place, I sat down to rest at the edge of a barren, rocky area. I felt very warm and peaceful there. I tried to pour out some food from my gourd, but it was empty. I drank some water. It was warm and stale. I thought that I had nothing else to do but to return to Don Juan's house and began to wonder whether or not I should start on my way back right away. I lay down on my stomach and rested my head on my arm. I felt uneasy and changed positions various times until I found myself facing the west. The sun was already low. My eyes were tired. I looked down at the ground and caught sight of a large black beetle. It came out from behind a small rock, pushing a ball of dung twice its size. I followed its movements for a long time. The insect seemed unconcerned with my presence and kept on pushing its load over rocks, roots, depressions, and protuberances on the ground. For all I knew, the beetle wasn't aware that I was there. The thought occurred to me that I couldn't possibly be sure that the insect wasn't aware of me. That thought triggered a series of rational evaluations about the nature of the insect's world as opposed to mine. The beetle and I were in the same world, and obviously, the world wasn't the same for both of us. I became immersed in watching it and marveled at the gigantic strength it needed to carry its load over rocks and down crevices. I observed the insect for a long time, and then I became aware of the silence around me. Only the wind hissed between the branches and leaves of the chaparral. I looked up, turned to my left in a quick and involuntary fashion, and caught a glimpse of a faint shadow or a flicker on a rock a few feet away. At first, I paid no attention to it, but then I realized that the flicker had been to my left. I turned again suddenly and was able to clearly perceive a shadow on the rock. I had the weird sensation that the shadow instantly slid down to the ground and the soil absorbed it as a blotter dries an ink blotch. A chill ran down my back. The thought crossed my mind that death was watching me and the beetle. I looked for the insect again, but I couldn't find it. I thought that it must have arrived at its destination and then had dropped its load into a hole in the ground. I put my face against a smooth rock. The beetle emerged from a deep hole and stopped a few inches away from my face. It seemed to look at me, and for a moment, I felt that it became aware of my presence, perhaps as I was aware of the presence of my death. I experienced a shiver. The beetle and I weren't that different after all. Death, like a shadow, was stalking both of us from behind the boulder. I had an extraordinary moment of elation. The beetle and I were on a par. Neither of us was better than the other. Our death made us equal. My elation and joy were so overwhelming that I began to weep. Don Juan was right. He had always been right. I was living in a most mysterious world, and like everyone else, I was a most mysterious being, and yet I was no more important than a beetle. I wiped my eyes, and as I rubbed them with the back of my hand, I saw a man, or something which had the shape of a man. It was to my right, about 50 yards away. I sat up straight and strained to see. The sun was almost on the horizon, and its yellowish glow prevented me from getting a clear view. I heard a peculiar roar at that moment. It was like the sound of a distant jet plane. As I focused my attention on it, the roar increased to a prolonged, sharp, metallic whizzing, and then it softened until it was a mesmerizing, melodious sound. The melody was like the vibration of an electrical current. The image that came to my mind was that two electrified spheres were coming together, or two square blocks of electrified metal were rubbing against each other, and then coming to rest with a thump when they were perfectly leveled with each other. I again strained to see if I could distinguish the person that seemed to be hiding from me, but I could only detect a dark shape against the bushes. I shielded my eyes by placing my hands above them. The brilliancy of the sunlight changed at that moment, and then I realized that what I was seeing was only an optical illusion, a play of shadows and foliage. I moved my eyes away, and I saw a coyote calmly trotting across a field. The coyote was around the spot where I thought I had seen the man. It moved about 50 yards in a southerly direction, and then it stopped, turned, and began walking towards me. I yelled a couple of times to scare it away, but it kept on coming. I had a moment of apprehension. I thought that it might be rabid, and I even considered gathering some rocks to defend myself in case of an attack. When the animal was 10 or 15 feet away, I noticed that it wasn't agitated in any way. On the contrary, it seemed calm and unafraid. It slowed down its gait, coming to a halt barely 4 or 5 feet from me. We looked at each other, and then the coyote came even closer. Its brown eyes were friendly and clear. I sat down on the rocks, and the coyote stood almost touching me. I was dumbfounded. I had never seen a wild coyote that close, and the only thing that occurred to me at that moment was to talk to it. I began, as one would talk to a friendly dog. And then I thought that the coyote talked back to me. I had the absolute certainty that it had said something. I felt confused, but I didn't have time to ponder upon my feelings because the coyote talked again. It wasn't that the animal was voicing words the way I'm accustomed to hearing words being voiced by human beings. It was rather a feeling that it was talking. But it wasn't a feeling that one has when a pet seems to communicate with its master, either. The coyote actually said something. It relayed a thought, and that communication came out in something quite similar to a sentence. I had said, "How are you, little coyote?" And I thought I had heard the animal respond, "I'm all right. And you?" Then the coyote repeated the sentence, and I jumped to my feet. The animal didn't make a single movement. It wasn't even startled by my sudden jump. Its eyes were still friendly and clear. It lay down on its stomach and tilted its head and asked, "Why are you afraid?" I sat down facing it, and I carried on the weirdest conversation I had ever had. Finally, it asked me what I was doing there, and I said I had come there to stop the world. The coyote said, "Qué bueno." And then I realized that it was a bilingual coyote. The nouns and verbs of its sentences were in English, but the conjunctions and exclamations were in Spanish. The thought crossed my mind that I was in the presence of a Chicano coyote. I began to laugh at the absurdity of it all, and I laughed so hard that I became almost hysterical. Then, the full weight of the impossibility of what was happening struck me, and my mind wobbled. The coyote stood up, and our eyes met. I stared fixedly into them. I felt they were pulling me, and suddenly the animal became iridescent. It began to glow.
It was as if my mind were replaying the memory of another event that had taken place 10 years before, when, under the influence of peyote, I witnessed the metamorphosis of an ordinary dog into an unforgettable iridescent being.
It was as though the coyote had triggered the recollection, and the memory of that previous event was summoned and became superimposed on the coyote's shape. The coyote was a fluid, liquid, luminous being. Its luminosity was dazzling. I wanted to cover my eyes with my hands to protect them, but I couldn't move. The luminous being touched me in some undefined part of myself, and my body experienced such an exquisite, indescribable warmth and well-being that it was as if the touch had made me explode. I became transfixed. I couldn't feel my feet or my legs or any part of my body. Yet something was sustaining me erect. I have no idea how long I stayed in that position. In the meantime, the luminous coyote and the hilltop where I stood melted away. I had no thoughts or feelings. Everything had been turned off, and I was floating freely. Suddenly, I felt that my body had been struck, and then it became enveloped by something that kindled me. I became aware that the sun was shining on me. I could vaguely distinguish a distant range of mountains towards the west. The sun was almost over the horizon. I was looking directly into it, and then I saw the lines of the world. I actually perceived the most extraordinary profusion of fluorescent white lines which crisscrossed everything around me. For a moment, I thought that I was perhaps experiencing sunlight as it was being refracted by my eyelashes. I blinked and looked again. The lines were constant and were superimposed on or were coming through everything in the surroundings. I turned around and examined an extraordinarily new world. The lines were visible and steady, even if I looked away from the sun. I stayed on the hilltop in a state of ecstasy for what appeared to be an endless time. Yet the whole event may have lasted only a few minutes, perhaps only as long as the sun shone before it reached the horizon. But to me, it seemed an endless time. I felt something warm and soothing oozing out of the world and out of my own body. I knew I had discovered a secret. It was so simple. I experienced an unknown flood of feelings. Never in my life had I had such a divine euphoria, such peace, such an encompassing grasp. And yet I couldn't put the discovered secret into words or even into thoughts. But my body knew it. Then I either fell asleep or I fainted. When I again became aware of myself, I was lying on the rocks. I stood up. The world was as I had always seen it. It was getting dark, and I automatically started on my way back to my car. Don Juan was alone in the house when I arrived the next morning. I asked him about Don Genaro, and he said that he was somewhere in the vicinity running an errand. I immediately began to narrate to him the extraordinary experiences I had had. He listened with obvious interest.
"You have simply stopped the world," he commented after I had finished my account.
We remained silent for a moment, and then Don Juan said that I had to thank Don Genaro for helping me. He seemed to be unusually pleased with me. He patted my back repeatedly and chuckled.
But it's inconceivable that a coyote could talk, I said.
It wasn't talk, Don Juan replied.
What was it then?
Your body understood for the first time. But you failed to recognize that it wasn't a coyote to begin with, and that it certainly wasn't talking the way you and I talk.
But the coyote really talked, Don Juan.
Now, look who's talking like an idiot. After all these years of learning, you should know better. Yesterday, you stopped the world, and you might have even seen. A magical being told you something, and your body was capable of understanding it, because the world had collapsed.
The world was like it is today, Don Juan.
No, it wasn't. Today the coyotes don't tell you anything, and you can't see the lines of the world. Yesterday, you did all that simply because something had stopped in you.
What was the thing that stopped in me?
What stopped inside you yesterday was what people have been telling you the world is like. You see, people tell us from the time we are born that the world is such and such and so. And naturally, we have no choice but to see the world the way people have been telling us it is.
We looked at each other.
Yesterday, the world became as sorcerers tell you it is, he went on. In that world, coyotes talk, and so do deer, as I once told you. And so do rattlesnakes, and trees, and all other living beings. But what I want you to learn is seeing. Perhaps you know now that seeing happens only when one sneaks between the worlds, the world of ordinary people and the world of sorcerers. You are now smack in the middle point between the two. Yesterday, you believed the coyote talked to you. Any sorcerer who doesn't see would believe the same, but one who sees knows that to believe that is to be pinned down in the realm of sorcerers. By the same token, not to believe that coyote's talk is to be pinned down in the realm of ordinary men.
Do you mean, Don Juan, that neither the world of ordinary men nor the world of sorcerers is real?
They are real worlds. They could act upon you. For example, you could have asked that coyote about anything you wanted to know, and it would have been compelled to give you an answer. The only sad part is that coyotes aren't reliable. They're tricksters. It's your fate not to have a dependable animal companion.
Don Juan explained that the coyote was going to be my companion for life, and that in the world of sorcerers, to have a coyote friend was not a desirable state of affairs. He said that it would have been ideal for me to have talked to a rattlesnake, since they were stupendous companions.
If I were you, he added, I would never trust a coyote. But you are different, and you may even become a coyote sorcerer.
What is a coyote sorcerer?
One who draws a lot of things from his coyote brothers.
I wanted to keep on asking questions, but he made a gesture to stop me.
You've seen the lines of the world, he said. You've seen a luminous being. You're now almost ready to meet the ally. Of course, you know that the man you saw in the bushes was the ally. You heard its roar like the sound of a jet plane. He'll be waiting for you at the edge of a plane I'll take you to myself.
We were quiet for a long time. Don Juan had his hands clasped over his stomach. His thumbs moved almost imperceptibly.
Genaro will also have to go with us to that valley, he said all of a sudden. He's the one who's helped you to stop the world.
Don Juan looked at me with piercing eyes.
I'll tell you one more thing, he said, and laughed. It really does matter now. Genaro never moved your car from the world of ordinary men the other day. He simply forced you to look at the world like sorcerers do. And your car wasn't in that world. Genaro wanted to soften your certainty. His clowning told your body about the absurdity of trying to understand everything. And when he flew his kite, you almost saw. You found your car, and you were in both worlds. The reason we nearly split our guts laughing was because you really thought you were driving us back from where you thought you'd found your car.
But how did he force me to see the world as sorcerers do?
I was with him. We both know that world. Once one knows that world, all one needs to bring it about is to use that extra ring of power I've told you sorcerers have. Genaro can do that as easily as snapping his fingers. He kept you busy turning over rocks in order to distract your thoughts and allow your body to see.
I told him that the events of the last 3 days had done some irreparable damage to my idea of the world. I said that during the 10 years I'd been associated with him, I had never been so moved, not even during the times I'd ingested psychotropic plants.
Power plants are only an aid, Don Juan said. The real thing is when the body realizes that it can see. Only then is one capable of knowing that the world we look at every day is only a description. My intent has been to show you that. Unfortunately, you have very little time left before the ally tackles you.
Does the ally have to tackle me?
There's no way to avoid it. In order to see, one must learn the way sorcerers look at the world, and thus the ally has to be summoned. And once that's done, it comes.
Couldn't you have taught me to see without summoning the ally?
No. In order to see, one must learn to look at the world in some other fashion. And the only other fashion I know is the way of a sorcerer.